96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
There comes a time when the game tolerates no spectators, only players. There comes a time when we must recognize that our individual aspirations shape our collective destiny. There comes a time when getting in the game, despite the risks, despite the challenges, regardless of the cost, is simply the right thing to do. There comes a time when we must find our hearts, find our soul, and pursue our purpose for the greater good of all, for country, for humanity. There comes a time when we must manifest our true greatness. Yes, there comes a time, and that time is now. So let's get down to the essentials. The essentials. Serious radio for serious people committed to advancing the national conversation.
The Essentials with Hubert Edwards, Thursday nights live at 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. on Guardian Radio 96.9.
And good evening and welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. I'm your host, Hubert Edwards, and you are listening to The Essentials, The Reset. We're here pulling double shift. If you were listening earlier, then certainly you would have heard me. Putting in some time for Nahaja Black on the hit back, but now it's time for The Essentials. And so we are going to have a discussion with one of our friends, one of our colleagues. We're going to have one of those fireside chat that we do from time to time, looking at what has transpired so far up to this point over the last 2 weeks or so. So tonight, it's reflection. It's reflection. It's time to think about the ins and outs, the ups and downs, what is good, what is not so good, what do you like, what do you don't like. And we would definitely wish to hear from you, 323-6232, 325-4316, or 325-4259. Our text line is 422-4796. And so won't you join us? It's not anything specific that we are discussing. Last week, we had ourselves a wonderful show. We had a discussion with the economist, Marla Dukaran, which has created, in my mind, a significant amount of discussion, which therefore means without contemplating who is wrong or right, it's always a positive thing. The fact that we have individuals who are speaking about a particular subject, talking on that particular subject, is really what we're here for. We're here to generate discussion, to have, to create a platform where we share ideas, where we can agree to disagree. Sometimes we will agree to agree, and other times we will just plain out disagree. But Marla Dukaran was here, and she spent most of the 90 minutes with us. And I think, you know, very, very powerfully laid out some of the issues that we are faced with. Unfortunately, and I must say this, as we wait for our guests to join us. Unfortunately, I believe that there are individuals who have in some way missed the boat. They have allowed themselves to be overtaken by this discussion about default. And I must admit that, you know, in her first iteration last year, she said, well, Bahamas is definitely going to be in the dance with the IMF. And so I think that was a little bit maybe too bold statement, but she's a professional. She looked at her stuff. She did what she did. This time around, at least, there was the news article or the story in the Jamaica Gleaner, which says Bahamas and Trinidad are the two most likely one, with maybe Bahamas going first. And that generated its own set of firestorm. But on the show last week, in no way, shape, or form did she say Bahamas is definitely going to be in a default. She did highlight the probability, the likelihood. But what I found very, very important and interesting was that she took the time to take us through the fundamental issues which could lead to a potential default. And I believe that a lot of persons out there are missing that. That's what they're missing. And to be honest, some persons, because she was on my show, I think I'll take the lease and say this, some persons were just being mean and unkind. They say things, they assume that they are right, and they just go right ahead and lambast persons who are professional, operate at a very professional, respectful level. But they say unnice things about the individual simply because that thing which is being discussed creates, I think in my mind, great anxiety. But that's fine. We talk about some of that with our erstwhile guests today. We will look at just a little bit of the election and the implications, but we mostly want to look at stuff going forward. What are we doing over the next 3, 4, 5 years or so? I have on the live line none other than Mr. Jeffrey Beckles. He is a friend of the show, and certainly he is the co-host when we do Fireside Chat. Jeff Beckles, welcome to The Essentials.
Good evening. Good evening, Bahamas. It's always a pleasure to join you. Good to be here.
Thank you so much. You sound a little bit warped. Maybe, I don't know, you need to check out your equipment.
I've been called worse.
Well, at least the sound coming over, you know, is a little bit warped. I am not... I do not make a practice of... saying bad things about people who share my ear style. So, Jeff, if you are still there, let's talk a little bit about the elections, only from the outcome perspective, 32-7. What are your thoughts on that?
All right, before we get to that, is the audio any better?
Yes, it is.
Okay, fantastic. All right. My thoughts, before I get into that, I just want to make one comment from your introduction and your overview. We do have a tendency to have a lot of people in the Bahamas and around the world who are great.
Yeah, the audio is fading. I'm not sure what's
on. Gone again?
Yeah, it went back to kind of little sound a little bit garbled.
Okay, one second. I'm actually going to do something called a technology switch, right?
Yes, okay. Please do.
Stand by 1 second here.
All right. So, Jeff will come back and we'll talk about the election. In the meantime, since we were talking about Marla Dukeran, there's a headline in the business section which says, Bank Chief Pushes Back on Imminent Debt Default. Prominent banker yesterday said there are no signs the international capital markets agree with a Caribbean economist that the Bahamas sovereign debt default is imminent. Go on Bo, Fidelity Bank Bahamas chief executive told the Tribune that the Bahamas Ba3 credit rating was still above the sea territory where most defaults occur. While the country's bondholders were given no immediate sense of panic or sign that a sell-off is closed. He pushed back after Marla Dukeran, the former Royal Bank of Canada, chief economist for the Caribbean, doubled down on her earlier prediction by restating in her monthly newsletter that the Bahamas sovereign debt restructure and International Monetary Fund Adjustment Program will occur within the next 2 years. So, yes, she put out another paper yesterday, and I think encapsulated in that was the issue. We expect a debt restructure and an IMF program in the next 2 years, she said, in June to July 2021, stopover visitors reached 72% of corresponding 2019 levels. Government debt reached $10.356 billion at the end of June, up 16% year over year. So, you know, she has certainly reignited this discussion. And it's going to be a very, very, very interesting and important discussion going forward. Here is why. And here's my approach to it. I remove from all of the discussion the possibility, I say, and I have just written a piece which will maybe be published next week, but I have said in that piece, let's agree that a default is remote, near impossible. Then what? And I think that's where the conversation must start. Let's agree. There's going to be no default. Absolutely no default. There are too many avenues available to the Bahamas at this point in time to make that not happen. Then what? That's where, in my mind, the rubber meets the road. Are you back now, Jeff?
Still? Well, that depends on what you're going to tell me.
You sound very, very, very clear this time.
Then I'm back.
Yes.
But as I started to say, right, there are going to be a lot of people with a lot of comments about left, right, stay, center, no, stop, go. One of the things that we have to learn to do in this country is we have to learn how to disagree without being disrespectful and discourteous. Right?
Yes, yes.
It is critical to our advancement as a people because it directly reflects the degree to which we have either matured or really not matured, right? And when I hear all the banter back and forth, it's really, really good to have lively debates based on perspectives. But at the end of the day, whether or not you and I agree has less to do with whether or not we respect the fact that we actually too disagree. Mm-hmm. Because out of that disagreement, we have the ability to take what's good from either commentary and hopefully enrich a position that will ultimately cause us to be better. And I would really hope that those persons in our country who feel it an obligation to comment would do so, first of all, respectfully, but yet with the objective in mind. Because I, you know, you may call me ugly. The other guy may say he isn't so bad looking. And somebody else may come along and say, well, you know, he's a good looking fellow. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you have three opinions. But at the end of the day, what have we accomplished, right? And so one may say, well, you know, you're blind if you say he's an ugly fellow. But at the end of the day, the point is we should really be focusing our thoughts and our ideas on the real issue, right? And I think your last comment really sums it up. Assuming that there is no default, which is a good thing, now what? The work still has to be done. The reality of where we are in our fiscal life still has to be confronted. And there still has to be a very practical, very rational approach to finding a medium and longer term solution to fiscal life. Mm-hmm. Other than that, we know this. We will continue to tread water and to take on water, and then we put the country at risk. So I think the conversation really has to be focused on where do we go from here? And I'm hopeful that we can be able to find that common ground, because the truth of the matter is we could talk all day long. It's not going to change our fiscal disposition.
No. And, you know, it's not that I do not understand the idea, the thought of a default anywhere in this Caribbean region for any country. It's significant. So I understand when persons will push back. But I really would like, as a country, that we do not invest too much energy focusing on something which is, in my mind, not likely to happen, but focus on the underlying fundamentals, which would have, in some way, must be off kilter. Otherwise, we wouldn't be having this conversation at this point in time, would we, Jeff?
And that's the very point I was going to make next, because even if we never hear from Mahler or anybody else again, never, I won't say never, next 10 years we
never
hear from them. Let's say we never hear from them.
Yes.
It literally does not change where we are
exactly.
Today, right? And then I think we have to be smart enough to know this. The solution to our disposition is not an easy one.
No.
At all. Therefore, we must operate on two tracks. In order for the Bahamas to get where it needs to get on the right road toward the fiscal correction, let me put it that way, right? There are tough decisions that have to be made. Our thinking should be along the lines of what the Bahamas needs to do if we plan for no default, mm-hmm. right? Then we should also be smart enough to think, what if things don't go our way and default becomes a dot on the radar? Now, and that some may call that negative thinking, but no, I call it smart thinking.
Yeah, strategic thinking.
Strategic thinking. Where we are is in a very grave state, right? So we must treat this like we treat any patient. What if this patient in the next 24 hours takes a turn for the worse? What do we do? Mm-hmm. And so this is where the smart people who like to, you know, fill up our airwaves and fill up our newspapers and on Twitter and everywhere else, this is where the smart people among us need to be contributors to the solution and just simply stop just talking. I mean, we have so much talk. And so it's not that we don't have the capacity. We do have the capacity in the Bahamas. What we need to be able to do is harness that capacity without the interference of political partisanship and personal emotion. I used to say this a lot when I speak to gatherings, that in the Bahamas, we have grown to be known as a people, when you ask a question, you will get one of three responses. You're going to get a personal response, a political response, or an emotional response, none of which may have anything to do with the question or the truth, but you can get it.
Yep.
Right? And I think that's where we as a people could actually learn how to focus. Because to be honest with you, Hubert, we do have the capacity to figure out a solution. The question is, are we prepared to embrace that talent that exists right here in the country?
And that is clearly so. Now, in the for good sense and good measure and to be fair, not everyone has discussed this or dismissed this in the same way. There are obviously persons who are very considered, deliberate, and they're also saying, look to the future. The persons who frighten me very significantly are the ones who propose the idea of no default as the end of the conversation. And those individuals, I think, are very short-sighted. And in some instances, Jeff, without getting myself in trouble, in some instances, I believe that some of the individuals who are touting that idea are not totally vested in the best outcome for the country, but have attached themselves to the conversation in an opportunistic manner as a means of sending a signal of support. That's my conclusion. You don't have to comment on that. I think it is important that when we engage in national conversation, we not only put our best foot forward, but we keep an eye open on those who would leverage a situation for their own personal gain. We are too much vested, often we are too much vested in self. And because we find ourselves in a position where our thoughts can be captured, just like I am sitting here and I have the ability to say just about anything in this mic and whosoever is listening will hear, we are too often willing to abuse that, whether it's radio or social media or whatever platforms we're available in. We need to be, I think, a little bit more considered and start to think more about country than where do I fit into this in the first instance. Not that, it's not okay to figure out what part you play or how there may be a benefit which will accrue to you in the long run. But most importantly, how do I transact this conversation in the best interest of country? That's kind of the mantra with which I lead with. And I believe that some persons could do well to adopt a little bit of that at least.
I think you said something earlier about strategic, and there's a reason why it's called strategic, right? Mm-hmm. Because it takes into consideration a number of variables, a number of possibilities. And you see that same scenario played out in the NFL, in baseball, in basketball, in hockey, in team sports, in track and field. You see it played out in everyday life. Even when you're trying to get from home to your office, mm-hmm. you have a thought in your head of a route, but then you have alternative routes just in case, right? Mm-hmm. And so I don't, it's the same simple application. And I'll just close my comment on this by saying this. Smart people don't have to advertise.
Smart people don't have to advertise. Okay, so let's talk about the election. 32-7. What were your thoughts on that landslide victory by the PLP?
It's a wow moment. It's a wow moment on several fronts. The PLP led by Mr. Davis ought to be commended for their victory. I think nationally, and I say nationally because it includes all concerned for the political in the political space, that the election showed us, knocked on our doors and showed us some things that we need to start looking at, namely election reforms in general need to be looked at very, very closely. Mm-hmm. We also saw one of the lowest, in fact, the lowest voter turnout in the history of our democracy, which by itself is another wow moment in that we're going to have to challenge ourselves to look more deeply and understand why we dropped to such a low number when we would have had a historical reputation of 90%+ of our registered voters, right? Yeah.
That number, before you move from that number itself has occupied my mind for a bit, right? And on one hand, so I think we ended up at 67%. At the end of the day, initially someone was saying, well, initially it was out there that it was 38%, and that was a wow for me. Mm-hmm. So we average about 90% annualized, up or down, but I think it's an average over the years of 90%.
That's reasonable, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. For the effect of COVID, I took a 25% adjustment of that number. So going into the election, my expectation was that 25% of the persons will not turn up because of COVID, just because of that and any attendant issue. And when you adjust it by 25%, I may be too generous, because now we are hearing a lot of rationalization as to why person didn't turn up. But at 25% of 90%, you work out somewhere around 60-something percent, right? And so it's not way, way out there, out of the ballpark, right? And that, I think that has to be taken into consideration in the discussion, because if it doesn't, it may have the effect of not legitimizing the true intent of the electorate.
Well, that is true, and that is reason I said that the voter turnout in general is cause for concern for us to challenge ourselves. Because even if you factor in the COVID environment, right?
Yeah.
Would it not lead then, should have led to a greater discussion about electoral reform, so that in the event we're challenged with issues like COVID, mm-hmm. it doesn't deprive a citizen of their right to vote?
Yeah, that's true.
So it drives us back to that very same conversation. Mm-hmm. But if you took it another step, then and let's say that the COVID factor is less than the 25% that you attributed to it, then what does it say? Because I think it is very clear. There was a good number of Bahamians who simply did not bother to make the effort to vote. Mm-hmm. That in itself also creates for us a wow moment that says, hey, what's going on with our people? Because we are a people who love to vote, right? And so, and then you take into consideration of those who turned out, who actually did turn up to vote, right? Mm-hmm. I hear a lot of people talking about, well, the base the PLP base, the FNM base, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, what does that really mean in 2021? Who is this base and what do they represent? Because to your earlier point, that too may not when we examine it, may or may not necessarily reflect the will of the people, but give them credit, they turned up and they voted. Mm-hmm. So I think the whole voter turnout scenario gives us good reason to examine the why and the what and the how, because again, COVID or no COVID, I mean, we've seen low voter turnout in some other elections that occurred this year too. But I also think too, though, in fairness, you can't the fact that people were just simply sick and tired, right?
Yeah.
And all of that. So I think going back to my second point, we have to challenge ourselves to look more deeply at this beyond the COVID impact. And then, as I said, you know, we saw one of the highest number of candidates ever mounted for any election in the country.
I think there was again 19,000.
Pardon?
Yeah, I said I think there was like 19,000 candidates.
Yeah, actually 19,200.
Yes.
No, but we saw one of the highest numbers ever. But what does that say, right? Mm-hmm. We saw increased numbers of the coalition and independents. And we had two coalition groups, but 225 plus or thereabout candidates vying for these 39 seats.
Well, I think it says, Jeff, that there is a robust democracy or experiment thereof, which is on the way here in the Bahamas. It says that there are individuals out there who are themselves forward for leadership for whatsoever reason, for whatsoever their motivation. It speaks well to the vibrancy of the democracy as practiced in the Bahamas. If you narrow that conversation, though, in terms of challenging the dominance of the two traditional parties, then there's a whole lot of other issues which need to be or can be discussed in terms of the number of individuals who may have put themselves up for independent representation or been participant in groupings which may be questionable. I'm just going to say it, which brings to mind question as to their viability and ability to actually win a government.
Well, that is true, but I would respond by saying it this way. Could it be that this also is signaling a revolution in the way the average Bahamian sees the electorate and the electoral process, mm-hmm. in that for decades we have bantered between one of two? Could this be the signaling that Bahamians are beginning to become more aware that we don't have to get stuck in that rut anymore, but there are options? Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, we've never seen this kind of brave, and again, no pun intended in that, but we've never seen this kind of brave step by so many to step out there. And maybe it may be sending a signal. When you add whatever the conclusions are about the voter turnout, right? And when you add the factors of this number of brave souls who are stepping out there to say, look, I believe that it's time for us to take a second look at how we vote in terms of institutional administrations, right? Could it be that this is signaling to the Bahamian voter, look, there are other opportunities out there. There are other options. I'll tell you this. I believe, generally speaking, that this last election has indicated signal to us that Bahamians are less patient, and Bahamians are going to begin to feel the strength of their political legs. And I think you'll now begin to see a very diversified campaign going forward, because you'll see a lot more people involved.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting scenario which is set for those who have an interest in this. And so,
well, let me just say this last point.
Yeah.
If you look at all we have seen in the last few years, and we've talked about millennials and Generation X, Y, Z, J, and all of them, right? If you just think about the role that they will be playing in future elections, it is very clear they're not as patient. It is very clear that they are not going to subscribe to the traditional way of voting or thinking about politics in the Bahamas. And that in itself will signal a significant change is coming to the Bahamas. It may not come in the next four or five years, but I think it is fair to say, since they are going to be the major voting bloc in the coming elections, I believe you'll see change. Well, either that or both traditional parties will be forced to go under some major renovation to meet that potential challenge.
Yeah, and that's the point I was going to make. I think you will see the change at the level of leadership and who actually is participating and who may be offered or provided with the opportunity to be in leadership position. But at the end of the day, I think history suggests that for a while yet, we are going to have an entrenched position between these two parties. Yes, there may be a third party which is going to rise up. The Coalition of Independents did some interesting things this year, but you know, it's not dissimilar to what happened with the DNA in its first iteration. But we'll have to wait and see. I'm having a conversation with Mr. Jeff Beckles. He is the CPA and former CEO of the Bahamas Chamber of Commerce and Employees Confederation. We get together from time to time and we have these fireside chats. So we're going to take a break here. And when we come back, Jeff, we're going to talk a little bit about the cabinet and the executive. We won't go too much into it. You know, it has gotten its fair share of discussion, but you know, it's certainly, if we're looking back over the last 2 weeks, it's a significant enough issue for us to touch on. Don't move. Come right back.
For the best jerk in the Bahamas, you must have Balu's. Pork, fish, and chicken served with our delicious country-style sauce and authentic festivals. Balu's, Nassau East South. Call or WhatsApp 376-8951. Balu's, the jerk with the soul of reggae and the spirit of Junkanoo. Balu's, traditional, slow-cooked to perfection. 376-8951. Get yours today.
You invest in your children, your home, and your community. But are you investing in your financial future? At CFAO, we specialize in investment management, retirement planning, mutual funds, and private wealth management. Our team of experts never stops helping you plan for tomorrow. Because tomorrow begins today. Call us at 502-7010 to see what our financial advisors can do for you. CFAO. Growing wealth for future generations.
October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Other than skin cancer, breast cancer is the most common cancer in women. Breast cancer is also the second leading cause of cancer death in women after lung cancer. Can you help? Yes, you can. You can encourage women to take steps to help lower their risk of developing breast cancer and help find it early, when it might be easier to treat. You can also help connect women facing breast cancer to patient programs and services they might need throughout their treatment. We encourage you to share these messages during Breast Awareness Month and throughout the year. 2021 has been a powerful reminder that we are all in this together, and our choices and actions have the power to protect the most vulnerable among us in a big way. By working together, we can inspire hope and become a force for good and help create greater awareness during Breast Cancer Awareness Month. To participate in our upcoming supplement, contact Guardian Media's advertising department or your account executive today.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
From innocence to experience, from dependence to independence, journeying on. Well, now I have loved and I have been loved. I have judged and I have been judged. Journey, journey on. So whether calm or storm, cause I'm in all and all is in me. Journey, journey on.
And welcome back to The Essentials, The Reset. We have in our fireside chat, as Jimmy Cliff says, it's journey. We're just journeying on, right? We have to keep moving with the pace of time. We have to keep looking at the things which life has thrown to us. We have to assess. We have to discuss. That's what some of us do. Others are out there laboring in different regard. But at the end of the day, we are really about nation building. We are really about trying to see things in the clearest way possible. And so, you know, we're having this discussion. It's a reflection on the last 2 weeks since the elections of September 16th. And what has transpired since then, and what are some of the implications? Nothing too heavy, but important discussion. So as we said, Jeff, let's look at the cabinet selection. The Honorable Brave Davis has decided that in cabinet he needed to have 22 ministers, and he would have extended that by choosing 7 parliamentary secretaries to end up with an executive, effectively, of 29 persons. When contemplated against the backdrop of the fact that they won 32 seats, how do you see this? Is this something that you consider to be a significant mistake or a fatal mistake, a significant decision which should have been different? What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, there can be a lot of thoughts on that. Is it surprising? No. Could there possibly be some possible good elements in there, in that could it be that Mr. Davis is also setting a trend to ensure that they're investing in younger politicians with a view of exposing them early, so that they're politicians and move away from the status quo? There could be some merit to that, and that's yet to be seen. But it's unexpected. But, you know, the reality of it is, he made a comment that in defending his cabinet, mm-hmm. that he needs all hands on deck, and he right. wanted to get as many of his folk around the table to brainstorm and flesh out solutions. There is a hope that it would signal that this administration is also open to engaging the private sector in dialogue and actual meaningful dialogue, so that the ideas that are fleshed out around the table are not seen as a cure-all, but that they are prepared to tap into the resources. And then we have to think about it in this perspective. From this perspective, we can talk about the size of the cabinet, but the truth of the matter is, in 6 months to a year, if they start scoring runs, nobody's really going to care if the cabinet is strong. But if 6 months to a year from now that they ain't scoring no runs, God help them, because you know it's going to happen, then they're going to open themselves up to all the criticisms that come along with this decision. So it is what it is for the moment. I believe that everyone who has been appointed, regardless of what the level is that they would have been appointed, whether full-fledged minister or kind of a junior minister or a parliamentary secretary, the reality of it is they must get to work. And the honeymoon was over at midnight on Thursday last, mm-hmm. right, on the 17th. So, and they are up to the task, and it's up to them to prove to the Bahamian people that they are, so that the criticisms that they that have been levied against them are either proven or otherwise. And if they do well, then all of us as Bahamians benefit from that.
Yeah. The signal of the heavy lifting which is required, and I think, you know, it's a reasonable way of explaining it. I have a slightly different take on that, or an additional take, which works well with your whole idea of giving persons experience and having them, you know, being able to kind of move up the scale fast. But the era of heavy lifting, I think one of the biggest era of heavy lifting is going to be in this idea of rescuing the economy, as is stated in the Blueprint for Change. And while we'll jump around some of the things I just definitely don't want to get into in terms of the reduction in VAT and thing, that's a discussion for another day. But the Blueprint for Change is proposing economic reforms to immediately begin a comprehensive review of the taxation regime of the Bahamas, transform the tax system to make it more equitable and progressive, and to encourage parity, and create a model for international infrastructure funds with private sector participation through public-private partnership for infrastructure facilities and air and seaport. So that's the economic reforms which it is looking at. What are your take? Are these the things which are needed at this point in time? And to what extent is the rationalization of the taxation regime needed? How far do we need to go at this stage?
Well, good question. Couple of things. This administration, like any other, would be better served by practicing a clear thinking strategy about their solutions, right? There's no doubt that we are at a point in our lives where we must give greater attention to clearly thinking things through. And you mentioned briefly about the issue with VAT, and they talked about that during the campaign trail. That's great and all, that's nice. But at the end of the day, think that it also has a backdoor effect, right? Or later effect. As you know, I have said before that no real economic recovery plan can be successful in the Bahamas without a discussion about tax reform and just revamping our entire tax regime. It is a must. We cannot achieve any level of economic reforms without it, right? Mm-hmm. So your point to making sure that it's more equitable, which we know the current system is not. We need to make it more progressive. We know that the current system is not. And Bahamians, by and large, we don't like the idea of talking about tax reform, because the first thing we think about is, oh, I'm going to get hammered. No, doesn't necessarily mean that. All it means is that the current structure we have is not serving our economic needs as a country, and it needs to be fixed. It needs to be amended. We have long talked about the possibility of PPPs, public-private sector partnerships. Just hopefully, we can get to the point where we stop talking about that as a political campaign narrative, and it sounds great and it sounds wonderful, and truly get to the point where we are able to form real PPPs. It is one of the ways to lessen the capital outlay or requirements for government when we do strike these partnerships with private sector entities. And this administration would be wise to seriously consider that, right, as a way forward, because obviously we need infrastructure. Yes, we do need a new hospital. We need to upgrade many of the platforms that the government operates on. In fact, we need to have a more robust digital infrastructure for the government to operate on. Mm-hmm. So there are any number of things that need to be done in the Bahamas that can actually be real progressive thinking through public-private. We hope that we are at the point now in our life where we get those things done, as opposed to talking about the pie in the sky idea of public-private partnerships. Let's just get it done. I think it'll help the Bahamas. It'll create some buoyancy in the medium and longer term. And I think it'll cause more and more Bahamians to engage in some of these projects where there's mutual benefit.
Yeah. One of the other areas on the rescuing the economy that they speak about is fiscal responsibility. And there are two main points there. Stop the financial leakage in our public sector, including insider deals, through fiscal consolidation and modernization of the infrastructure, deliver public goods and service in an efficient, transparent, and accountable manner. Really have no issue with that. But let's come back to this whole idea of insider deals and financial leakages. There is the perception in the Bahamas that there is a reasonable level of corruption, a reasonable level of quid pro quo, as it's stated here, inside a deal. I do not expect a significant party as the PLP, which really was the first administration to lead this country in an independent era to make a statement such as this if it's frivolous. So to the extent that the PLP in its platform says, we are going to stop insider deals, it's fair for us to conclude that there are, in fact, insider deals taking place in government. And I think this is one of the areas where the general populace becomes very apprehensive of government. I think it's one of the areas which impact the existing trust deficit. And I think it's one of the areas which really put individuals who are willing to do the heavy lifting, to put in the work on their own merit, become very, very concerned, become very frustrated when other individuals, because of their association, because of their attachment to persons who may sit in seats of power, are able to kind of skate by because they have the opportunity to make these deals. How far do you think this will go in terms of creating a revolutionary shift in the way we do government? And do you think that this is actually, we are going to see evidence of this over the next short while?
Well, first of all, let me address something you said earlier, the trust deficit. The trust deficit has widened in the Bahamas, generally across the board over the decades, right? But it's more than domestic distrust. The international community must also get a sense that we can trust the governance of the Bahamas, right? Because confidence in investors, in the investor community is a critical part of our economic recovery. So this administration, like any other, who has come out and made such a strong statement on their position, must work very diligently to ensure that it, in the first instance, lives up to its commitment by ensuring that the requisite legislative changes are made and further strengthened by its commitment to recognize and stamp out by addressing bad or corrupt habits or trends, right? Where we know that we are not a country that is known for merit reward, but relational reward, right? We must do better at strengthening the legislative rules around procurement and the whole RFP process, et cetera. We must demonstrate a strong commitment to doing that. And then I want to go back to something I said in my second point about where we discover it, we address it.
Yes.
Now, you and I may not necessarily like to be the one to send our friends to jail or to punish them for it, right? But the Bahamas must get to a point where it recognizes wrongdoing, it must address the wrongdoing and punish the wrongdoing. Other than that, what's the motivation for being honest? Unless you have sufficient, strong enough personal character that says, or integrity that says, it's not mine, I won't take it. I didn't get it the right way, I won't have any part of it. You and I know that that's not the average person we come into contact with, right? And, you know, lest there be some who want to be sanctimonious, you know, the guy that runs red light and the guy that takes the grapes out in the food store and the guy that eats the chips in the food store is no different than the fellow in downtown who gets the $100,000 contract. The point is, we have to be a people who are committed to personal integrity, okay? Because I can't expect for my elected official to operate at a high level of integrity when I'm doing the exact same thing that I want him to be punished for.
Yes. And I think that is so, so important. And we have to get to the place where we start to hold ourselves accountable and we hold everybody else accountable. I think, you know, in the article I wrote yesterday, I think it was published yesterday, one of the things I said is that the prime minister will have to demonstrate and create and cause a situation to be that where anyone in his administration or in government would wish to step outside the bright lines, they should become very, very, very fearful of him, because they would be convinced that he's going to do everything necessary to move them out. Now, you know, I was trying to maybe get in a word before this individual leaves. So I'm streaming on Facebook, and you know Graham, right? Graham Rutherford, Weatherford. You know, Graham is one of those individuals that it doesn't matter what you're discussing or how you're discussing it. He has a set of, you have a preset number of ideas which he will throw in there. So he came in and said, the first thing he typed on the chat, Jeff, is the Bahamas is rich. Now, here is an example, and I'm not saying that the Bahamas is not rich, but here is an example of why we often have suboptimal discussions. Because we try to rationalize digging into the areas which are soft, into the areas where we have weaknesses and deficiencies, by rationalizing an ideal, a state of perfection. And the truth be told is that in many instances, that state of perfection is more likely to be enjoyed by certain individuals and not seen at all at another extreme by some individuals. When we have this just simply be for exchanging words, it should be at least to bring a level of consciousness and awareness to other individuals who may have a lesser understanding or who may not have the time to spend to dig down into these issues. We have to accord unto ourselves the responsibility, the obligation to enlighten individuals and stop being deceptive and stop saying things which are open to misinterpretation by individuals who may be vulnerable to going in the wrong direction. We have to do that. We have to get to that point. It's about personal maturity, personal responsibility in the interests of national and collective growth.
I fully agree. I know Graham well enough to say this. At the end of the day, whether the Bahamas is perceived as rich or not, the to be fixed. Because if the conclusion is that the Bahamas is rich, meaning that, or suggesting that we don't have any challenges, then it's a misleading statement. At the end of the day, the Bahamas as a country has many, many ailments that beset it, right? Mm-hmm. And let's be clear. The things that ail us today, but that beset us, are not things that have happened in the last 3 to 4 years.
No, they're not new.
We find ourselves here over a 30-year march, 35-year march, right? Collectively, a little bit here, a little bit there, a little bit, a little bit. I was having a conversation the other day with a group, and, you know, one of the individuals got up and says, well, you know, it's a matter of the lesser of two evils. So I said, the lesser of two evils. I said, do you realize when you make a decision and you're dealing with the lesser of two evils, you're not voting for lesser, you know.
You're still voting for evil.
Yep.
Yeah.
And most of us forget that. I'm not voting for lesser, or we're not choosing lesser. We're not making a decision about lesser. We're making a decision about evil. The issue is we need to stop thinking about lesser of evils and start to think of what is the objective we're trying to achieve and who best aligns with that objective. And that's why I am not a proponent of vex voting. Right? Vex voting don't help me none. Right? Because vex voting just does that. So my point is we need to be really focused more on what is the objective for this country. And you've heard me say this before in several other places. We are not an objective-driven country. And when I stop to think of the extraordinary talent, the extraordinary experience that we have in this country, the educational levels in this country are just astronomical. And yet, I find that we are not, for the most part, objective-driven. We need to move, and we need to change our narratives, and we need to stop all this loose talk about this one and that and this one, more to whom, to hurt. Listen, this is not a choice about hurt me the most. This is a point of who hurt me and why am I actually hurting, right? I don't care if you hit me harder than the next guy. The fact is, I am hurting. And so I think that's where we need to get in the maturity of our discussion. And then just, you know, just dispense with this notion that because one guy stole $10 versus the other guy stole $5, we say, well, I could deal with the guy who stole less. Well, he still stole. And on what level is stealing right?
Yeah.
Right? And it goes back to the conversation about that we just finished talking about whether or not we have the courage to stand up and to say no to corruption, to say no to underhanded deals, to say no to unfair deals. I'm a strong believer in that unless you find yourself in a predicament where it is such a dire emergency that there's only one person who could provide the solution, then you should have the courage to declare that and that say that, look, this is the reason we make. Beyond that, there should always be this the expectation of openness, honesty, and transparency. And I'll say this to the Bahamian people. This is our country. There's no way I can say to you, I trust you to be honest, and then turn my back. No, you have to constantly be able to demonstrate that you are honest so that one day I can turn my back and know that you're going to do the right thing, because there are mechanisms in place that let you know the day that you choose not to be honest, not to be transparent, and not to be accountable, we will no longer accommodate you, period.
Yeah, and I think that is so important. As I read from the blueprint for change, it says reform, setting the framework for good governance and growth. Bolstered by the long-term goals of the National Development Plan, we will embark upon an aggressive strategy for reforming into a more nimble, progressive, and competitive country with sustained economic development. On the side, it says, we will pass anti-corruption, our first 100 days in office. We will ensure that policies implemented result.
That's a long
yeah,
time.
Yeah, 100 days. We will ensure that policies implemented result in a transformed Bahamas that enable growth. This includes electoral, parliamentary, economic, local, and central government, immigration, and foreign affairs reform. That is the blueprint for change. And I read that simply because you mentioned the fact of being objective-oriented. That, without disputing what you said, I can say this. I want to say this. This document as outlined, and I think I will put it this way, has created a social contract between the now ruling administration and the people. The 10-point, rescuing the economy, compassionate social relief and strengthening security, reconstruction and resiliency, Bahamian empowerment, commitment to sovereign wealth fund and natural resources. Number 6 is revolution in education. 7, progressive youth agenda. 8, healthy Bahamas. 9, a plan for each island. And 10, national development. I think that, Jeff, in the context of laying out a plan, without discussing the efficacy of the plan itself, I think the PLP, like the FNM did in its own document, has clearly indicated where it wants to go and the things that it believes, that the party believes, now the administration believes, necessary to fix us as a country moving forward. Let us take a break, and when we come back, we will continue that discussion. But how do we assess some things for the future? How do we think about the funding which the health minister is calling for? And how do we continue to build or rebuild for the future? You listen to The Essentials, The Reset. Don't move. Come right back.
Now that your age is not everything, now that your kids call you for advice, now that you can achieve anything you set your mind to, why stop? Nourish your strength and energy with Ensure. Ensure provides protein, antioxidants, key vitamins and minerals to support your immune system. Now that it's your moment to enjoy your vitality, why stop? Your life, your health, your Ensure.
For the best jerk in the Bahamas, you must have Baloo's. Pork, fish, and chicken served with our delicious country-style sauce and authentic festivals. Baloo's, Nassau East South. Call or WhatsApp 376-8951. Baloo's, the jerk with the soul of reggae and the spirit of Junkanoo. Baloo's jerk, traditional, slow-cooked to perfection. 376-8951. Get yours today.
COVID-19. Do not panic. Be prepared. Some persons may get worried and feel stressed whenever there's an outbreak of diseases like COVID-19. Do not panic. It is better to be informed and prepared. Talk to about your concerns. Make a plan for how you will keep your home and workspace clean and disinfected. Practice proper hygiene and preventative actions such as proper hand washing and coughing and sneezing etiquette. Stay informed about local COVID-19 updates from trusted and reliable sources.
This message brought to you by Bahamas Ministry of Health in conjunction with Guardian Radio.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Welcome back. I know, Jeff, you do not understand one thing that was said just now, but it's the sound of the producer, Mr. Kermit Ramen, invoking the ancestors and waking them up, and just believe that we need to bring them into the space as we have this discussion. So, how do
you... I just wanted the people to see you dance to that just now. They couldn't see you just now.
No, they couldn't see me.
I just hope that they get to see how you were dancing to that.
You know that Shaka Zulu have nothing on me when it comes to dancing like that. So let's look at this whole issue of assessing the future. Let's talk about some of the funding which we have heard the health minister call for, and also this focus on rebuilding. But before you answer that, well, when you answer that, I want you to answer it against this backdrop, which is taken from the Blueprint for Change. The status quo will not work in today's reality. Either we reinvent, reimagine, reinvigorate, or die. The business as usual approach to governance, our people and our island will not work. Governing with integrity in a digital environment to empower Bahamians is a must, and economic reforms are critical for long-term growth and development.
Beautifully said, right? And again, I don't want to come off as cynical. Congratulations to Mr. Davis, the Davis-led administration, for declaring these things. Much of it is not new to us as Bahamians. We've heard it time and time again. However, I go back to what I said earlier. These things are to be seen, and in the context of the work that has to be done, I believe that they are to be commended for identifying these issues as urgent enough to have attention. Mm-hmm. Somebody was saying to me the other day, asked me after the election, what did I think? I said, what do I think about what? I said, well, what do you think about the election results? I said, well, they are what they are, Mr. Dave. We have a new prime minister. And we have a new team, administration. It's our job to go and support them so that they can be successful. And he almost fell out of his clothes. And I said to him, well, what are you prepared to do? Sit on the sidelines and wait for 5 years while the country, flails in the wind? I said, no, it is our responsibility to get behind the initiatives of this administration and push so that the Bahamas gets across these finish lines. So that being said, they're to be commended for identifying them, but you referred to a plan, the national plan, and I believe that it's important for every country we promote it in business. We promote it in individuals' lives. Have a plan. There has to be a plan. But one of the things that we don't promote as an entrepreneur, as an individual, you need a plan for your life, is the value of having a changed mindset. Because without a changed mindset, the plan is useless. Okay? And so we must be equally preparing our people to change paradigms and to change the way of thinking and so forth. They mentioned that the status quo won't, is no good to us. I've never met an environment where the status quo worked. And so I think it's important, I think, to identify those weaknesses and those challenges. I think it's important to encourage Bahamians to get involved, because you're right. Innovation, creativity, and collaboration have to come off the paper. And this administration, since it has now won the government, must be prepared to take those words off the paper and become, they become active parts of their day-to-day government, of our day-to-day government, because it is a collective effort by all Bahamians. We must promote innovation. We must encourage it. We must encourage creativity. We must ensure that we are collaborating at every possible level. Dr. Darvill reached out and said the other day, we need urgent funding to mend our health care system. Well, guess what? It's a cry, yes, not a new cry, but it's an urgent cry. We must be able to, in the first instance, identify what is needed in infrastructure, what is needed in human resource, before we decide on determining money. We get $100 million, yeah, that's fine, but what are you gonna spend it on? Mm-hmm. We have to, and I go back here, we have to be deliberate thinkers. We have to think things through. We have to be able to identify the challenge and figure out in this space, in that space, and then how do we put this all together? We have to get out of this cycle where we consistently spend hundreds of millions of dollars for little or no gain. And I'll give you a good example of it. Health. I mean, do you think we just realized that PMH is a disaster?
No.
And our healthcare facilities in the country are a disaster or inadequate? Let me be nicer. Inadequate? No. We've known this for decades. But if you added up the hundreds of millions of dollars we have spent, and look where we are today. In real terms, if you'd given that money to a private sector entity and spent the same money, I could almost guarantee you we would not have the same result today in 2021. What am I saying? I'm saying that the capacity for us to better identify our needs and better quantify why we need to spend money in this area and that area exists, that ability exists. And that is what, and if it wants to see the success that it touts in its blueprint for change, that is one of the ways that we are going to see it. No disrespect to anyone who holds any office in this country. The fact of the matter is the status quo, as they have rightly said, cannot and should not be able to remain. We ought to be diligent about stamping out mediocrity. We must be diligent about stamping out old thinking. We must be diligent in embracing new ideas, new technologies, because I'll tell you, we can identify countries around the world who are doing far better at the same thing than us, which means this: we do not have to burden ourselves with finding new solutions. Cut and paste is one of the highest forms of tribute you can pay to anyone. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. The mm-hmm. wheels have already been invented. We have to now be prepared to go look at best practices and figure out how do those best practices meet our need, and then begin that process of really quantifying what we need, when, how.
Yeah, and I really believe, and the only reason we are focusing on this is because, you know, no sense at this point in time focusing on the others, because they didn't win the election. we are now locked into the PLP, who has won the administration. As it says, the PLP will implement the National Development Plan initiated by the last PLP administration that provides a coordinated approach for inclusive national development to create a more resilient and vibrant Bahamas. I have no argument with that except this. I believe that the process need to be reset. There need to be a concerted effort to reach across the aisles, to reach out to all major stakeholders, and to create, if you will, a national consensus as to the relaunch. Otherwise, you run the risk of this becoming politicized, having skipped one administration, being set up by one PLP administration, skipping an FNM administration, and then implemented by a PLP administration. And that output, that outcome, we should avoid at all costs. And that is pretty much the only thing I would have to say on that. But the issues here, we must admit, the issues which are document are very interesting and impressive. And if done with precision, and if done to the fullness of the effect that we can glean from them, I think there should be some turn. Now, Jeff, in the last couple of minutes that we have here, I think we must always never have a conversation without focusing on the way forward and the solutions. So as the government, as the administration sits around the table, now start deliberation with the cabinet, starting to put the various pieces in place, the boards, the committee, and so on and so forth. What are some of the policy positions that you think should be at the forefront? And what type of an approach you think this administration should be taking as it implements these policy positions? We know that they have outlined what they plan on doing, but the structure going forward, how should they ensure that these become reality? Like you said, move from paper to the real world.
Well, I'll answer that in very practical terms, right? And I guess I've already given that answer. The administration has to be challenged to be very practical, right? This is not a time for big words and, you know, nice statements. I think, and by that I mean, the administration must do well to ensure that the average Bahamian understands what is at stake and what is being planned and how it affects them down the pipeline, right? One of the things that we don't do well is we don't inform citizens where we have the opportunity or the obligation to do so, right? We've talked a lot about the fiscal adjustments and all the reforms that are needed. So there has to be an equal effort given to helping Bahamians understand the impact on me as an average citizen. When we decide to do these things, how does that affect me so that they can understand it and it doesn't come as a culture shock to them. And if it, even to the point if I'm going to be required to pay more, I should be told that. I should be told how to prepare myself for that. Because while you may, every Bahamian may not wish to or want to get involved in the discussion about how to, every Bahamian will be involved in how it impacts me. Secondly, I think we need to really work hard at ensuring that we work harder at bipartisan collaboration. For far too long, we have sat, well, this is my idea, this is their idea, it's their idea, I don't like it because it's their idea. The opposition must understand, all those other candidates who ran and were not successful must understand it is a part of their duty. If you wanted to represent me, simply because you didn't get elected doesn't mean that you need to reach across the aisle to the point where we are investing in good ideas, solid collaboration with the view of coming up with a good result. Mm-hmm. The other areas that I know that we talked about, all the other legislative reforms to support the fiscal behavior and fiscal management of our country, but we must also be prepared to invest in human capital, right? I believe that for decades now, One of the significant areas that we have not taken into consideration that does have an impact on how we are governed or how governance is perceived is we've not truly invested in education of our people. And that's not just at the school level, but in general terms, right? And how do I know that? If you listen to the typical radio program every day and you listen to the typical interactions with our political leaders, our social leaders, our business leaders, very little of our time is spent in constructive educational discussion, okay? And one of the ways to get our country on the same page is to change the narrative a bit to where we don't have just hours upon hours of just gripe and complain, but where we are helping Bahamians understand for initially where we are, what's required, and then let's help Bahamians understand why the government is making a decision to do A, B, or C. I think we'll be better served. If I had to give this administration three words that I would like to, for them to keep in their minds, it was get to work. We don't have the luxury of talking about who did what to whom, when they did what to prison. We are where we are. I understand that. Let's get to work. There are Bahamians out there looking, willing, able to help. We are prepared to help. We're not politicians, and we don't want to be politicians. But Hubert, let me tell you something. The capacity that this country has is so vast. This administration would do itself well. Stay focused on the low-hanging fruit, collaborate, and let's come up with plans and strategy and keep it moving in the right direction. If we do that, I believe we'll be okay.
I'm going to share one small tidbit with you, right? I guarantee you that every single individual in that cabinet or who sits around a caucus or who sits in a meeting will hear these words over and over and over. Let's get on with it.
Agreed.
Let's get on with it. There's one individual who sits in their midst, and that's one of his most favorite terms. No fooling around, no playing around, just let's get on with it. And I think the extent to which any grouping respond to that statement and respond in a fundamental way, not just doing, but doing it with the right outcomes, for the right outcomes, for the right reasons, in a fundamental way, will certainly make a huge difference.
I fully agree. And that the Bahamas is at a state at where we have to be so results focused now. We don't have the time to skylark, as old people use it like to say, right?
No.
We don't have time to feel good about ourselves. We've won. You've won. Good. Let's get to work. There's something else that hangs in the balance, because we're not actually, this is not about the next election, you know.
No.
As we have typically liked to behave, right? Someone said to me, one of my friends said to me, who has served in Parliament, he said, look here, you know, we get elected and the first year, we're trying to figure it out. The second and third year, we're trying to, make some things happen. But the next, the fourth and fifth year, we're trying to get reelected. So, but I want to say to the Bahamian people and also to everyone involved in governance, the administration, the opposition, all the candidates who were not successful, this is not about the next election. This is about the health, well-being, and the future of our Bahamaland. And it is high time that we begin to see it that way. If by chance the next election happens and you want to vote one way or the other, fine. Mm-hmm. But we have to stop thinking next election as the priority. The priority is not the next election. And I hate to spoil somebody's, you know, parade right now, rain on their parade. But where we are right now is about the well-being, the welfare, the good governance. The future of the Bahamas is what we need to be working on. Because at the end of the day, that's all that matters. When the external partners and stakeholders mm-hmm. refer to the Bahamas, they don't call Hubert's name, they ain't gonna call Jeffrey's name, they're not gonna simply say Mr. Davis or Dr. Menace or Mr. Bain or whoever. They are going to say the Bahamas.
Yeah.
And that's me too.
But you know, Jeff, in all things, we have to give due consideration to the objectives of whatsoever the individual or the grouping is about. And the objective of a political party is to win the election. Don't let nobody fool you. That's their objective.
I agree.
The objective of the country or the electorate is to find the best leadership. And that simply means that the party must align itself with that particular objective. And there's no tension between the two. If you want to remain the government, then you just have to work in a way which impresses upon the electorate. Now, you know, it's people, and people will change on you even sometime when you give your best, and your best is good in some instances. But that being the case, you have to figure out the way of aligning that objective so that you can create and achieve your long-term objective while creating and achieving the long-term objective of the country. You said earlier, and you don't want to scare anybody, but I'm going to say it in this way, drawing even from this document in front of me. The truth is that the Bahamas has, in many instances, worked its way down to one option. In many, many things, we are down to one option. And we either accept that option and work hard at it to fix the problems, or we are going to suffer. It's almost like we are in a dual situation. And that's why I believe, and I've said it before, this particular administrative year, this administrative period, the next 5 years, is so fundamental for the Bahamas that even if you are the vilest individual and think really badly, you don't want to be wishing any bad luck on this administration. You don't want to be wishing any bad luck on the opposition as it does its work to hold the feet of the administration to the fire. You don't want to wish any bad luck on any person who wants to sit on a board or a committee, any part of the machinery that is working for the advancement of the country. You want to be praying for them, because guess what? I believe that if we start to get this wrong at this stage, Jeff, we are going to have hell to pay. And the main reason for that is largely because where we are with our economic state, the critical mass of debt, the fragility of the, and the fact that right now we are in the cycle of borrowing, which means that the economic productive capacity of the country is always going to be waning unless there is a fundamental turnaround from an economic point of view. Your thoughts?
The other three words that I will leave with all of us for the administration, I said earlier, I gave them three words: get to work. The other three words, make it happen, because what you just said is exactly right. And what you just said has nothing to do with partisan politics. Right. It just happens to be with where we are as Bahamians in that country. I said to my colleagues the other day in another space, I said, listen, if there was ever a time that we need to diligently pray for our leaders, it is now. And not just those who won their seats, but all those who contribute to the decision-making of this country. We need to literally pray for them. I had a guy walk up to me and says, I wish we have one of those storms come our way so they can understand what it feels like. And I said to him, are you really seriously saying that? And he says, I am as serious as I am black. And I said, well, blow me down. That's a mentality that really faces in this country is quite pervasive, right? They hope that we have trouble such that the administration fails. Well, I want to say publicly that that is foolish thinking and is foolish talking, and we need to rise above that. So I agree with you. These are challenging times. This is an opportunity for the Bahamas to show itself as being what we've always said, as Timothy Gibson wrote in our national anthem. And I still believe today that Timothy Gibson wrote the most progressive and impactful. It says these words: lift up your heads to the rising sun, Bahamalan. When we think about those words in that first line of our national anthem, It ought to serve as an inspiration. Lift up our heads. It is time for the Bahamas to lift our heads collectively to the rising sun. You know why it said to the rising sun? Because nothing on earth can grow without the warmth of the sun. We have it in abundance. We have people. Let's lift our heads. Now is the time.
I think that's an important starting point. Because in anything, you have to create a vision and you have to have a clear destination. So as you lift your head to the rising sun, that's where we're heading. That's where you want to go. That's reach. That is where the completion is. But in many instances, that's a dream. That's a dreaming part. And you have to then get to work and you have to do it. So because Jeff is brilliant and he draws on the national anthem, I'm just going to follow him. But I'm going to go to the end of it for the most part. I'm going to go to national words. This is the motto, right, Jeff? What does it say? What does it say? Forward.
Forward.
Upward.
Upward. Onward.
Onward.
Stop.
Together.
Stop. Forward, upward, onward. So we have to be moving forward. We have to be moving upward, always improving. We have to be moving onward. Yeah, always going on. But the question is, how do we do that? The motto says we must do that together. And the people who write that, I think, were great visionaries because they understand that no one man, no one group, no one class, no one party, no one ethnicity, no one segment has the ability to do. Even if there was one limiting grouping which have the ability to make the Bahamas the richest country in the world, to pay off the debt and so on and so forth, if there isn't togetherness, there's going to be social unsettlement. Unsettling. So the together part is very, very important. And that is why I would say to you, Jeff, and to the administration, and to everyone who is involved in government, including the opposition, we must look to the policy position as you spoke to them. And we have to ensure that the reforms which are necessary are pushed through. The reforms which are needed in this time are significant, and we have to be very brave to move them through, no pun intended. So fiscal responsibility and all of that which has been started by the minister administration need to be continued, and they need to be extended. But more importantly, well, not more importantly, as important, growth. You have to find the growth. You have to find the growth. Through diversification, through extension, through new investment, through whatsoever means. And that's one of the reasons why I think that this addition of investment in a particular ministry overseen by the Deputy Prime Minister is important. So we have to move for that. And then finally, as Marla Dukran, not a very popular name to call in some places, but I have great respect for the woman, for the lady, we have to ensure that we are at a place where we can create buffers, counter-cyclical buffers, which means that we can save for a rainy day. We need to get to the place where we are growing so that we can save. So one, we need to have the reforms to create a facilitative environment. Two, we must grow. We must earn such that we have enough that we can save for the rainy day when the shocks come. And if the policies do not fit, in their totality, if the policies do not enable that type of formula, if you will, that type of a methodology, we are going to be challenged. So as we move forward, as we look at the development of policies, we want to be always looking and asking ourselves the question, where are the reforms which are needed? Where's the growth and where is the buffer? We'll clean out the time, Jeff, your final word in 30 seconds.
Thank you, Hubert. It's always a pleasure to be here. I just want to leave this final word with everyone listening. Read the Bahamas National Anthem. Don't sing it. Just read it line by line and listen to what God enabled us to have as our national song. Know your role. Not all of us can be at the top playing premier roles, but there is a role for each Bahamian to play. Let's find it. Let's play it. God bless you.
I think that is a great place to end. Listen to the national anthem, read the motto, and believe it. And not only believe it, but live it in its true essence. We want to say thank you for listening. It was certainly a pleasure to be here. Thank you, Jeff. And as usual, we always say, do not allow your greatness to become a victim of your unwillingness to change. You've been listening to The Essentials, The Reset. Good night.